Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
I'm feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, once again for embracing your bounce. Nikias, man, what's going on? How are you feeling today?
Feeling much better. Was not feeling great on Saturday. We pushed through. Happy to be home for the first time since the first week in July. So just kind of soaking up the apartment at the moment. No, it's going well.
It's quite the flex in 9K, but we'll let it slide.
I don't know if that classifies as a flex. Like, I just want to sleep in my bed after a while.
Well, that's wholesome content, so we'll let it slide.
There we go. Speaking of the weekend, were you able to catch Drew League activities?
I did watch Drew League activities. It was an activity, I'll put it that way.
What does that mean?
I mean, it was cool. It was like, hey, look, it's LeBron James and also DeMar DeRozan. And I felt bad for the camera person.
Mm-hmm.
It was rough start, but they got it together. No, I mean, I felt bad, man. Like, it's not easy to film basketball. That's the one thing I have a takeaway on. It's like it reminded me of the first time I had to film practice in Memphis. I quickly learned, yo, I'm not good at this.
Oh, no.
So I had to work to get better at it. I mean, you have to, like, position it. You can't move a lot. You need to, like, be ahead of the ball, but also you need to actually see all the action. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. So, felt bad there. Watching LeBron do LeBron things was funny. Like, when the HB dive at half speed was jokes. And then DeMar DeRozan just casually handing out buckets. Just was funny. It was actually nice to watch a game and not know what the score was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had no idea what the score was until I saw LeBron in the paint 4 straight times in a row. And then I quickly realized, okay, I don't know what the score is, but it's not going great right this moment. Like, he went straight, we need a bucket mode. And I was like, all right, cool. But no, it was cool. It was great. LeBron, having to guard LeBron has to be a hilarious experience.
Yeah, like, what do you do with that exactly?
Make the face that dude made when he shot the fadeaway.
Like, this is just 6'8" to what? 2 question mark. We never know what LeBron's weight is. Sometimes it's 250, sometimes it's 270. It's whatever he wants it to be. But, like, that's a lot of basketball player to have to deal with. Like, I would be heated if I just came in, like, knowing I'm on a Drew League roster, I'm about to play, and then you see the Chris Haynes tweet in the morning. It's like LeBron showing up. Like, wait a minute, this is not what I signed up for. Like, cool, this is LeBron, but also, I'm not trying to guard HB Dive or the people stuff.
You saying someone took PTO that day? Called back into work?
Might have. Like, oh, no, I thought the game was on the, oh, no, no, I'll be at next weekend.
Yo, I'm actually mad available. Y'all got a shift?
Give me more hours out.
I don't necessarily know how it works, but I wonder how it felt to be on the team LeBron was going to play for and then realize your day has also changed.
Ah.
As in, all right, bet. So this is cool, but also, I'm going to be doing some clapping and pointing today.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my game off. I'm just going to have a front row seat to 42-16, apparently. Quick shout out to Dave McMiniman, who wrote a gamer for the Drew League game, which is cool. We got some intel sprinkled into the piece, but also, what, 42-16 for LeBron? What was it, 2 of 13 from 3, I think is what it was? Something like that. I was like, huh. So they got box scores out there.
Right. They do have box scores. It was helpful because I was trying to figure out some names. It helped me out so I didn't misquote anybody on the interweb. But yeah, man, I knew you weren't watching it because we didn't get a Nikias weak side defense joke, which you would have made.
You know me. I don't know. Like, what were they running? That'll be that's my last Drew League question.
Oh, God. What do you think they were running? Come on.
Was it just clear out, let LeBron go? I mean, that's the easiest way to do it. Where's the fun in that?
It was just basketball. Or as some on the interweb couldn't stop talking about the lack of spacing and that being the soul of the game and the grit.
I see.
The grind and
took it back to where a hoop was supposed to be in the phone booth.
The '80s.
Ah, I see. Fair enough. Well, while Drew League play was going on, Summer League was wrapping up.
It was wrapping up. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but we do have a new segment. The hashtag is Big Flashback, folks. Okay. This is going to be a big victory lap episode for Nikias, so I do want to get this out of the way. August 12th, 2021, Nikias Duncan tweets, "Can we contract the Blazers Summer League team?" July 11th, 2022, Nikias says, "Summer League Blazers, eh."
Uh-huh.
With not another Blazer-related tweet. And your Vegas Summer League champions are?
The Portland Trail Blazers.
Would you like to apologize to the Rose City?
Yes, actually, I would.
Or are you going to call all of us mid?
No, that's your bit. But, my apologies to the Portland Trail Blazers. So, not the 21 team. That was an abomination to Summer League teams. The 22 team, however.
Did you start with your apology, but the non-apology? Oh, brother, let me buckle up. Go ahead.
Oh, no. But, props to the Blazers in all seriousness. A much better roster and a much more fun roster than I thought we were going to get. I was keyed in early and was like, okay, cool. We finally get to watch Shaedon Sharpe play basketball. That's going to be interesting. And then he played all of 7 minutes because of injury. And I was like, well, that's not fun. So finished out that first game. I was like, all right, well, these are some prospects and some young players that I know. But, like, I don't know where the fun's going to be. But they kind of flew around all summer long. And so I do want to give them their props. The second tweet you were referring to when I said Summer League Blazers, I was in Thomas and Mac for Blazers Knicks, and the Knicks jumped out to something like a 14-15 point lead in the first quarter. I was like, oh, the Knicks won. Their defense is just incredible. But I was like, oh, so it's just going to be this. That's fun. The Blazers ended up coming back and winning that game. And I was like, ha, well.
So you went full Nikias in the summer. Got it.
Full Nikias in the summer. Hey, man. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. That's how I feel. Gotta stay informed. But no, serious shout out to the Blazers for winning. They ended up winning the championship game 85-77 over the Knicks. 22 from Brandon Williams, who became one of my favorite fringe point guards to cap off last season. So we'll see how much pick and roll goodness we see from him this year. But what were your thoughts on the Summer League Blazers? This is more of your ministry than mine.
I mean, I think it's an equal ministry. We've been talking about Summer League. You had a list of 28 people last week. Jabari Walker stood out for me. A, congratulations on getting the deal. B, I really enjoyed his quote that came out halfway through as far as him being taught that being a role player isn't a bad thing. And mm-hmm. You can make a ton of money being a role player and you can be a starter. And a lot of people don't embrace that. And he kind of embraced that this entire Summer League. He played with great energy, great activity. Played with juice on both ends of the floor. And he did a lot of the little things that'll get you a look, get you a shot on the court. And when you have that kind of size, you give that kind of effort, you can potentially guard multiple positions, crash the glass, space a little bit, knock down some threes. It's fun and it's interesting because we think a lot of specialists these days, but it's always the players that have a level of versatility that seem to always find their way onto the court.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can quickly find your way off of it, but if you can bring multiple things to the table, a team can live with maybe that one thing that isn't the best right this second. If you only bring one thing to the table and that thing isn't going well, we're going to have to go somewhere else.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see how he grows in that area, but a lot of energy, fun to watch.
And that concludes the Blazers segment of the program, it would appear. I have a quick Summer League. I don't even want to say it's a pet peeve. That's too strong. I guess a Summer League question. So the championship game was on Sunday at 3 Eastern, correct? Why were there like 5 other games after the championship game? Like, why does that not just cap off the Summer League experience?
Because those games are already scheduled. And you want to get the championship game in that afternoon TV window? So they can't undo the games.
I see. But like, why are those scheduled on the... This is above my pay grade. I genuinely don't know. But I'm just looking like that. Like, okay, cool. Knicks, Blazers. And then we got a Heat game, a Raptors game, a Clippers game. And I was like, wait a minute. All these teams are like 2-2. Why are they playing after the title?
You get to celebrate and then go home.
While everyone else has to, like, y'all just got to watch them foul out with the Summer League rings. I don't think I got your opinion on that. How you feel about the Summer League winners getting rings?
It's cool. I mean, it's a lot better than getting a t-shirt. So I'm glad they're at least doing something. I think it's fun. If you're going to grow it and boost this thing, they can at least have the memories of the win there. I think it's fun. Okay. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I don't have, like, I'm not going to be old and musty about it.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing. I saw some of the sentiment, like, what are we doing here at Summer League? And it's like, why? Like, what does this hurt? I guess would be my rebuttal to the complaints I saw about it.
Now, what did you think of the Summer League trophy?
Like, also fine. I didn't have a strong opinion on it. You are all grimacing. Right. What's the...
No, that's fine. We can move forward.
What do you...
We got to get down to the bottom of what's going on with trophies.
Ah. You know what? That's fair. Okay, before we officially close out Summer League, were there any players that you wanted to shout out that we might have missed on Thursday's episode?
As of right now, no. I'm going to let you continue with the hashtag big list and get the folks, some of the people that maybe you didn't get to on our last podcast, and make sure you give that kind of shine. It's all you. Swinging the rock.
I see. No big list for me, I can assure you. Want to shout out Sanju Mamukelashvili from Milwaukee, averaged 17-9 during Summer League. Had the nice poster dunk if you didn't see that on the NBA account. But otherwise, just a mix of a little bit of everything. Some playmaking, some post scoring, a little bit of rim protection, some active hands on defense. I don't know if he's rotation player good yet, but he's intriguing enough for me to root for him. Fiondu Kevengele from Boston was a Clipper last season, if I remember correctly. Obviously, was not making that rotation with as deep as the roster was. Found a home with the Summer League Celtics. Kind of ripped the Warriors. If you want to highlight one game, people were coming to see what James Wiseman looked like, and he quickly caught lobs and swatted shots and did a little bit of everything. Earned a two-way with Boston. The other two-way went to J.D. Davidson, who is a ball of energy, honestly. Averaged 13-8 assists as well. The drives were interesting to me. The playmaking was there. I want to see what kind of playing time he garners. That concludes my very short list. How did I do?
Too good. It's well done. Okay. Nice and concise. You knocked it out the park. I feel like the bit is now over, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Oh man, we'll run it back for next summer. It's fine. But no, that's it. That's all I got. All right, let's do some more NBA housekeeping before we shift to the W. We did have some re-signings and some signings happen over the last few days. Keldon Johnson agreed to a 4-year, $80 million extension with the San Antonio Spurs. How are we feeling about $20 million a year for Keldon?
I mean, it's, again, you got to readjust your mind to the market. But, I mean, that's pretty much the rate for a wing. And he's of that age, so you're going to lock him up, have him for 4 years, have him either be a piece of what you're doing next or be a trade piece, but you don't have to worry about not having him anymore. So I like the move for San Antonio. As they continue to build and find the rest of their pieces, he's going to be a part of what they're doing. So you hope that the growth he showed last year, he can continue to build on, and you might have something cooking. And if not, you can always move forward. But I think it's a good opportunity for him with the roster they have to continue to grow. So I think sky's the limit for him in San Antonio.
I, too, like the deal. Like, I would have, if I was eyeballing it, I would have been looking at, like, 470 if I'm nitpicking. But, like, that's still pretty good value for him. I am intrigued to see if the three-point shooting is going to be real for him. And I think that's where the next step is going to come offensively. Because we've talked about him throughout his young career so far. The drives are so physical, so aggressive. They don't stop. And last year, it felt like he was starting to at least find some of the in-between stuff. Trying to figure out what the floater looked like, see a little bit what the pull-up looked like. The results weren't always great, but you could see that part of his game growing. And then the three-point shooting. the volume just skyrocketed for him. The willingness to take open shots or even against soft contests, taking those, like that boom. And he had a stretch during the second half of the year where he was shooting a bunch and also shooting well from three. And I was like, okay, if he can kind of round out those edges, this is going to be a really fun offensive player. Defensively, like, has the body to defend both four spots. Like, I wouldn't consider him an elite defender by any stretch, but the tools are there. I want to see just how he continues to develop on that end, if he's going to become more switchable. Again, he has the tools to do so. Like, this is a solid two-way bet for San Antonio, and this is the kind of deal that they need to do, retain someone like him while they're going through this rebuilding process, if that's what we want to call it now, with DeJounte gone. I think he's going to have a little bit more freedom offensively with no DeJounte. So I guess just watching the development from him going from play finisher to more secondary creator, I want to see what that looks like, how many of those reps he's going to get and how comfortable he will be. But I like Keldon. I'm a big fan of Keldon. Congrats to him for getting the bag. Solid work for San Antonio, in my opinion. We were recording early on a Monday afternoon, which is a little bit different for us, but there was another re-signing that came through the pipeline today. OKC has re-signed Kenrich Williams to a 4-year deal worth a little bit over $27 million. Steve, what are your thoughts on one Kenrich Williams getting the bag?
Well, his name is his name. It's not a... It's Kenrich Williams, you know.
Oh, brother.
Also, I guess, you know, I guess he got paid somebody.
Wow.
No, congratulations to him. That's awesome. He wants to be there. They value what he brings to the table. Is he actually going to play? Like, I'd just like to see him get the minutes for me, because he does have a talent. But he fits with what they want to do, and I'm glad they want to keep him around for the next stage. That's good for him.
We got a good for him for Kenrich Williams. This is amazing. Wow. Congrats to Kenrich on the deal. As one of the better / unheralded / underrated glue guys in the league, a wing that can drive, that can make some passes on the move, that can defend, that can knock down spot up shots. Versatile wings, at least among role players, are kind of what you want on good teams or otherwise. And while OKC is still not close to contending, having a vet in the room that just knows how to play basketball is going to be helpful. Gives them a level of lineup versatility. He'll be able to kind of get in where he fits in among this group of young OKC talent. I love that for them. Love that for him. And if OKC does decide to go the other way, either this year or moving forward, like, that contract is pretty easy to move if you want to look at it from that perspective. Kenrich Williams is really good at basketball, and it's nice to see a good basketball player get paid. So shout out to Kenrich. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good. I was waiting for the Kenrich opus, so you do not disappoint.
I've been waiting. Like, the contract was beyond a bargain for OKC. So for him to get extended, bump up the value, was this a little shade under $7 million a year now? It's still a bargain. Like, that's still a darn good contract. And he's good. He's so good. I think the minutes are going to be there for him. Because while OKC does have a lot of young guys they want to play, they need someone that can do the fill-the-gap stuff. And, like, Kenrich can still do that, either at the 3 or at the 4. And so I imagine seeing him as part of some of their smaller units. Kind of playing off the playmakers OKC has. That's going to conclude my Kenrich Williams talk. Before I get hated on here. Anyway, Utah making a signing. Simone Fonte.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Don't get us canceled. This man about to get us packed up. Wait a minute, buddy. He was driving down the lane. He saw the paint protection coming. Wait a minute.
Oh, goodness. No, I was about to... I'm going to cut this portion of it. But no, because I was watching...
No, you're not. No, you're not. This is going in the pod. You are not cutting this out.
Oh, Lord. But no, what threw me off earlier today is because I was watching film of him and they were across different leagues. And so they had multiple pronunciations of his name. And I was like, wait, so which one am I rolling with here? But Simone Fontecchio is really is what I was going for. The pause kind of threw me up. But anyway, 2-year deal, $6.25 million per Woj going to Utah. Dude can shoot is where it starts for me. Just going over some of the clips from earlier, He wasn't just a spot-up guy, a guy that understood how to space the floor, how to stay in his driver's line of sight. They're running horns flare for him. They're running him off of staggers and set the feed, high release point, a little bit of a slower release, but contest didn't seem to bother him too much. So I have no idea what Utah's wing slash forward rotation is going to look like heading into this season. Like, we're still waiting on whatever the Donovan Mitchell shoe is going to be. Even with the bets that they acquired in the Rudy Gobert trade, like, I don't know how many they're keeping or what, but you got a movement shooter like that with that kind of size, like, there's going to be at least some sort of role for him. And regardless of what the roster looks like heading into the regular season, they're going to need spacers to kind of open things up. If it's full-blown youth movement, you're going to need someone to spread the floor. And if Donovan Mitchell's still there, like, that's a guy that Donovan Mitchell can find in transition or whenever he penetrates the lane, some easy kickouts there. So I'm intrigued. I'm not going to act like I'm an expert of this game, but, like, I'm intrigued from what I've seen. And to close things out, Casey Akpala to the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, wait, I don't get to talk about him?
No, you don't. No, I'm just kidding.
Man, this is speed right to Casey Akpala?
No, I just wanted to know you. No, what were your thoughts on the Utah?
Well, I guess the big thing is I don't know what team he's about to play with. So I guess that's going to be interesting. And I wonder how much translates. Because one thing, as I saw, I thought the defense jumped off a little bit. He's got some good size. He's got some good IQ, and he made some good activity plays. And offensively, as you stated, he can get a little bit off the bounce. Not afraid to get to a shot, get to a spot, pull up. How do they use him? What position does he get used at? Is he just going to space the floor? Is it going to be movement stuff? So I guess there's some things you wonder how will it translate. But overall, you get some size, you get some shooting. That's not bad in the league. I just don't know who else is going to be there.
Fair enough. Do you want to flow into the Casey Akpala talk?
Absolutely not.
Would you like to give your initial thoughts on Casey to the Kings?
Nope.
Why are you such a Casey hater, man? This is amazing.
I'm not, but it's good content.
Yeah. Anyway, 2-year deal for Casey Akpala to Sacramento. I am not going to promise that he's going to be a rotation piece for this Kings team. I will say he gives them some optionality off the bench. Mike Brown obviously coached him with Team Nigeria this year. I think if there's a calling card for Casey Akpala, it is the way that he uses his length on the defensive end. When defending with Miami, he was at the top of their zone when he was in rotation there. Very active, very long, very rangy. I would imagine for a Kings team that did not run zone very much last year, if they do play KZ, he gives them a little bit more reason to do that. Just as a guy that can kind of make plays in that aspect. This Kings team should also run quite a bit. So maybe that's how you get some offensive utility from him. Because in the half court, there are some questions. The shot is not there. Some of the drives are hesitant. So if they could find a role for him offensively, there's going to be defensive utility there. I appreciate the flyer here for Sacramento. As Steve laughs as I give the KC pitch.
I mean, there is film.
Oh, brother.
This man did a 6-tweet thread on the Bird app about KZ Akpala being signed.
What's the problem?
Man, you see Keegan Murray?
Shout out to Summer League MVP Keegan Murray.
Oh, I also enjoyed what you said, might not have as quick of a hook as he did in Miami. You do realize who's coaching the Kings, right?
Yeah, the guy that coached him during the Olympic play. What do you mean? He saw what he could do.
What were the minutes like then?
Hopefully the same if he was... all I'm saying is there are some things that KZ can do, particularly defensively. Mike Brown likes defense. This Kings team was not a good defense. There's a pathway there. That doesn't mean 38 minutes a night, but there's a pathway, especially if he can get, like, if he gets the corner three to a level, like, there, he just has to find something in the half court. Whether that's lurking around the dunker spot, if he's cutting off of Sabonis when they're going into some of their high post stuff or their handoff stuff. If he finds something, I think the defense is good enough to where you can warrant some consistent minutes.
All right, I'm all for players finding another shot and potentially finding their home. Fit and opportunity is huge. So hopefully being somewhere different and not having to carry the is this the year type of deal, maybe that helps him out. And we'll see if he grows in that way. So there you go.
That's probably the nicest thing you've said about KZ on this podcast. This is beautiful. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you for firing off KZ Akpala tweets mid-flight.
Would I beat me if I didn't, though? Kings fans haven't seen him. It's like, okay, well, here are my thoughts on KZ if you want to get just a skeleton of what he can bring or what he can't bring. So there you go. That was my contribution. Everyone's welcome.
And they were, whoever was next to you was looking at you like you was eating beans.
I hope not. We would have had some questions considering who was sitting beside me on the flight. Anyway, let's move to the W. Another weekend full of games, aside from Saturday, because they only had one game. I'm not sure why we're still having one game slates.
Look, man, I'm sorry, W, but the schedule, I understand. First off, yeah, fix travel. Nekias just did the rant, and then there's another thread of players not being able to get where they need to go in a reasonable amount of time. Yeah. Also, I'm sitting there on Saturday ready to watch some W. There is one game on. Not a second game after that, not one before it, just one game. And then you've got five on Sunday, and you'll throw six on a Wednesday. Just spread it out. The time is now. People want to watch it. Put it out there at times when people can watch it and know that it's consistently going to be on. But you never know. Is it going to be a four-game Saturday? Is it going to be a one-game Saturday? Is it Saturday afternoon? Saturday night? I don't know, man.
It would be nice. And as, again, the NBA, as far as games played, like, the NBA is just done until preseason play pops back up. So this is the window for you as the W to have two or three games every night. Even if you still want to keep your Mondays free, we shouldn't have a one game Saturday. Like, that's, we shouldn't have that anymore. Okay, that concludes my scheduling complaints on the flight thing. This was for the most recent Lynx Mystics game where the Lynx could not get in and they were not able to, according to Cheryl Reif, she wasn't even really able to talk to the league about what's going on, which is a whole nother set of problems with how that's being handled and how communication is being transferred with those situations. Let's get to the actual basketball. Steve, what did you watch? What caught your eye over the weekend?
Several games. Which one would you like to talk about first, sir?
We could start with, while we're on the links, we can start positive. We did host a watch party for Lynx Fever, because one of us had to champion the young team, the Indiana Fever, who are at the bottom of the standings right now, but remain interesting and fun, particularly when they're flung on offense. Steve is giving me the look. That's fine, though. Hey, man, sign me up for some Emily Inksler drives, some Queen Ekpo defense, Nalissa Smith just getting buckets on all three levels. They're a fun young team. They're not good. The standings show it. But, like, there's enough intrigue there to where things don't work. And then Kelsey Mitchell remains a bucket. Destiny Henderson off the bench. Like, they have some pieces. Can we talk about the Lynx? Because Sophia Fowles, particularly in the second half of that game, just ate the front court alive. It's like it took the Lynx a few quarters to realize, like, wait a minute. Sylvia Fowles is 6'6", and nobody on the Fever can deal with her. And I think you ended up posting the thread. Like, it just became like a high-low exhibition in the fourth quarter. The worst, like, all right, well, here's our action. You're going to try to front seal. We're just going to drop the entry pass over the top, and she's just going to lay it up, get fouled, or both.
Yeah, the post seals that she had in that fourth quarter, like doing your work early, like, okay, nice front. I'm also going to keep moving this way. And they gave her the whole paint to work with. So, you know, they run floppy, they go high low, and you realize, oh, wait, there's no one else below the free throw line.
Kind of a problem.
They could throw this ball anywhere to Sill. And they did. And it felt like it was over and over and over again. And that's the thing about the Lynx. When they have that lead and they can play with that kind of patience, it becomes tough. And their defense was good. I wish the Fever would just play with more pace. It was just very confusing to me to see them down 7 or 8 and playing in the exact same speed the Lynx were. And it's like, you guys are down. So speed this up a little bit.
I mean, they were... It's an odd phenomenon with them because they wanted to push early in the year. We get Carlos Knox in as the head coach and very early emphasis for him to push. And then they still have these stretches to where they're trying to play half-court basketball. And like, they have to learn how to do that. It's also hard to have the half-court battle against the Lynx, particularly when Sylvia Fowles is just dusting the front court. And so it became a situation to where the Lynx were just getting whatever they wanted. And now the Fever are pulling the ball out of the basket and they have to play half-court basketball at a certain point. And we've talked about this a little bit earlier. Once the Lynx are able to switch and ball pressure all over the place, like they can flatten you out in a way when they get humming on the defensive end. The Fever just didn't really have great answers. And again, just hallmark of a young team still trying to figure it out. But it got ugly in the fourth. So we'll be keeping an eye on the Fever. The Saturday game between the Sky and the Wings was a weird one, I would say. Like it was a
game of runs the whole time.
Yeah, the entire time. And it was the Wings knocking down tough shots. Marina Mabry just crossing up and dotting the I's of Julie Edelman. And it was the Sky, like, losing it on offense and then finding it and then once again losing it and then realizing, like, wait, we have a lot of talent that we can just blend together and we can just generate threes almost whenever we want to if we can get the ball into the paint. So that was a lot of fun. I'm still concerned about the Wings. What were you about to say?
Well, I was going to go back. I was piggyback on your Sky point. I again have to just put my hands in the air and realize I'm just not going to know exactly what the Sky are based on what I think they could be because it's different almost every time. Like you look at no Vandersloot, here comes Julie Almond, and boy, you shouldn't be able to just go from that to that seamlessly and with their bench depth. And then they come out running good stuff. They ran floppy to Spain to start the game. I was waiting for Nikias to raise the roof. But then it was just kind of like a little bit of lack of flow offensively, half-court struggles. I think they were down like, 6 or 8 to start? And I was starting to go into my, well, you know, Sky got to figure it out offensively. And next thing you know, it's 12 to 12. Like in a two-minute span, they went from like 2 points to 12 points. I'm like, all right, that's just going to be the Sky. Their defense is good. And when they find the way to remind you of what they can do offensively with their talent, and the versatility. You got to deal with Miesemann on a pick and pop. You rotate. Now Copper's open for three. And now Copper's hurting you with strong moves. And now, you know, okay, let's try and take her away. Okay, we switch. Now Candace Parker's in the post. Okay, let's not do that again. Oh, now Copper's in the paint. What do we do? So when they they start to trend into that area offensively, it's very tough because the defense is what it is. But it's going to be interesting to see if they can keep hitting that. But they're 19-6, so clearly something's working.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, okay, here are all of the slight concerns or questions that I have about Chicago Sky. Oh, yeah, they have the best record in the WNBA. That's cool. And you hit on it on the last episode. Like, the fact that they're this good and they're still a level for them to reach like that should scare the rest of the W. And on the Wing side, I just wish I had an idea of what they were trying to accomplish on offense. And it's kind of frustrating that we're this late into the season. And like, it doesn't even feel like outside of we're forcing turnovers and now we're bombing away. Like, I don't know what their plan is in the half court. Like, it's floppy and then it's a post up and then it's what do we do now? Or it's just a shot within the first 6 seconds of the shot clock as well. What did that accomplish if it didn't go? And so poor shooting night from Arike. Marina Mabry again knocking down a bunch of tough shots. She had some highlights in this game against the Sky. There was
I don't know what Alamon did to her, but it was something.
Yeah, she took that one personally, as someone would say. But even with that, like outside of transition stuff, like there was just no real flow there. And that bothers me. Actually, on a smaller level, what do you make of the center rotation for Dallas? Like, where do you think they should go? Because it's been a revolving wheel all season long, it feels like.
They just got to consolidate. Because you're not really getting the best out of... Who are you getting the best out of in your big room right now? Kind of just feels like everyone's in each other's way.
I don't know. Like, there are matchups for Tierra McCowan. But oftentimes, and I think I talked about it a little bit when I went to the Wing Sparks game a week and a half ago, to where it's like, okay, like you can feed her because she has this massive size advantage and she has good footwork, good touch inside the paint. And so you can feed her, but if you're able to deny the pass or you're able to just thwart that at all, again, it goes back into, okay, what is the secondary stuff? It feels very much, this is our play. And if it doesn't work, someone's going to have to bail us out. I don't know how much of that is personnel. I don't know how much of that is coaching. I don't know what the mix is there. But that's what it feels like. And you really see it when Tierra McCowell's in the game because it's feed her because there are maybe three centers that have like the frame to deal with her. And if she's getting to the free throw line or she's getting the quick seals and getting the feeds inside, it looks great. You stop that. The offense looks like a mess. And then defensively, having her on the floor just means something's going to be open. If you're running pick and pops against her, she's not venturing outside of the paint. If you're running moving stuff around her, like she's not hedging on screens to cut off movement shooters or anything like that. You're just able to, while the Wing's on the offensive end, it's very, we're going to do this or else. On the other end, like opposing offenses just have as many options as they want. Because they know that pocket of space is going to be there because Tierra McCowan is not going to venture out. So you go with Isabel Harrison, who is a very versatile big, but that versatility doesn't mean too much, at least offensively, if she's not getting the touches. And so it just kind of, I don't know where to go with it, which I don't know if that's great podcasting or not. But like, I don't have the answer to this. Like, it feels like the versatility of Harrison fits or gives you more pathways to solving whatever your issue is on either end. But it still feels like she'll play and then get three shots. And then they're winning her 16 minutes. And now it's nothing. Like, I don't know. And then trying to build the lineups around that becomes another issue in and of itself. This is a very confusing Wing squad.
All right, folks, for those keeping track at home, he has written the dream article and gone the other way. The Wings have now gone the other way. Who is next on the Nekias list? Lynx right now seems to be the one. Can't go Liberty. Won't go Mercury. Might be sparking it up in a couple weeks.
Oh, brother. I mean, the Sparks have been playing kind of well over the last... Anyway.
See?
Oh, brother. Actually, on the Mercury front, do we want to talk about the antics?
Go ahead, man. I really thought we had missed the window of opportunity.
We could have if we didn't podcast. Get them in back-to-back games. Like, we... Possibly, but like, we got the Sylvia Fowles kick. And then we get like a forearm to Ariel Atkins. And I just want to know, like, what are your thoughts?
Are you asking me? You have thoughts. You brought this conversation to the table, not me.
Like, we got an upgrade to a flagrant two, like 2 days after a game that the flagrant occurred. And also during a game in which another antic occurred. I'm just like, what are we doing? At what point? is a line going to be drawn? And it stinks to have that kind of thought because, like, Diana's low-key been playing well offensively the last the last few games. Like, she's starting to find her rhythm, at least from deep. But there's so much other stuff.
Slap push-offs.
Yeah.
I feel like she's very frustrated with the refs, and now her set becomes, I'm just going to run into somebody.
Yeah, and then after running into someone, it's then looking at the ref, wondering where the foul call is.
It's like probably, probably about to play three times beforehand. Like, I don't know. It just feels like a lot.
Is anyone happy in Phoenix right now? Like, across both leagues at this point. Like, is anyone happy right now?
Sophie Cunningham and Devin Booker seem happy.
That's probably the list. And campaign, because he always seems happy.
Oh, you took your family member off the list? All right.
No, I don't know if Chris Paul's ever happy. I feel like he peaks at, like, content. Which I feel him, but, like, also, I don't know if that's the healthiest way to go about it. But at any rate, do we have Aces Sun thoughts? Because I do.
I know you do in our weekly Aces segment. Chelsea Gray was passing in that game. Whatever pass you needed, she was giving it up. She was wilding out. Sun didn't have a chance against her in pick and roll. That was my main takeaway. And then the Aces just, they're so talented. And when you have that many players who can run pick and roll, and when they're scoring and it works, combined with the defense looking better, this is what happens. It's a tough blend. If you're going to let Asia and Plum score 20 plus, Chelsea get 21-9, good luck.
Best of luck. And, like, watching that game, felt like the Sun jumped out on them, but then here's a Jackie Young pull up here, an Asia bucket here. Here's some Raquana. Here's some Ileana Rupaire. Here's some Kelsey. The Kelsey Plum third quarter. This is why you tweet out the hashtag MV Plum. Because I don't know what you do when she has the blend, the pull up shooting, and drives going. Like, the Kelsey Plum transition drive where she's like, I'm hitting turbo. It doesn't matter what you guys are doing. I'm going to slither by you. Like, that's becoming one of my favorite things to watch in the league, period. Because you're kind of looking for the shot at a certain point, and then the playmaking off of that. Listen, she just puts her head down, and it's an offhand finish. It's using the rim to shield to get to the reverse sometimes. It's taking a bump and finishing through contact, drawing an and one. The finishing is at such a level to where if the jumper's going, like, you just have to go home at a certain point. But we've seen her knock down pull-ups against drop all season long. We've seen her knock down spot-up shots all season long. We've seen her get into the step back or the snatch back bag. If the drives are hitting too, like, go home. And then just zooming out with his Aces team, two things, and not anything that I haven't said already, but one, what a luxury it is for your defense basically has to say, well, if Chelsea Gray beats us, we have to tip our cap. Do you know how good you have to be for Chelsea Gray to be essentially like your fourth option that you worry about on offense? And as you hit on, she was dicing up the Sun at pick and roll. The Sun are a pretty aggressive defense. They'll send two to the ball. And Chelsea's good enough to string out that hedge and just sling the ball all across the lot. A bevy of no looks, a bevy of bounce passes. Like, it's fun. And then the other note, again, like, just keeping an eye on the Aces as a title contender, a lot of their half-court stuff is going to boil down to what are they getting from De'Erica Hamby. And I end up clipping a play from the first quarter that ended up in a turnover, which probably could have been a foul in favor of De'Erica Hamby, honestly. But I watched, and it was a Kelsey Plum, Asia Wilson pick and roll on the right side of the floor. They send two. Kelsey retreats, hits Chelsea Gray. Chelsea Gray quick swing to De'Erica Hamby, who was left wide open on the weak side. Corner three, didn't make the shot. And it's like, well, you hate to boil it down to make shots, but De'Erica has to be able to do that. If she's able to do that, if she becomes the fifth that makes them pay off the ball, good luck with this offense. They have the switch beaters. They have the drop beaters. if you can't afford to help off Derrick Henry because she's able to knock down spot up shots or drive without being called for travel and making plays off the bounce, that's going to be a lot to deal with. So once again, just keeping the guy on the X factor, like she feels like the X factor of this title race for me.
Well, I mean, usage. How much does she become a screener? Can she mix in some cutting? I'm intrigued by that as well. How much is going to be enough to just stay out of the zone of, well, we're going to make her beat us? Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's gotten there yet. So something to watch down the stretch.
I got you. On the Sun front, before we move off of the game, how do you feel about their half-court offense right now?
I mean, they're in the mud. And when their guard play is good, they look really good. When the shots aren't falling, it can get tough for them. So it's just kind of finding the balance with the creation because they have the post-up play, but can you execute consistently to get to that? Can you make the shots you need to get to that, get the stops, get the easy ones, and just kind of get a blend? It kind of feels like they need a blend or they need shot making. And you saw in stretches when they were able to make those shots, it was tough, but then you have a second quarter where you score 17 points, and it's like, ah, okay. Little by little, you find yourself in a kind of back-and-forth fest to where that execution you have doesn't necessarily have the same bounce to it. So, yeah. You know, and you have scoring guards. You have Heidemann, you have Williams who can get it going, but they don't have it. You know, you're chasing a little bit.
I got you. I guess to be fair to them in this particular game, they were missing a major pressure point for them. No Jonquel Jones in this one, who is currently in health and safety protocols. They did have Breonna Jones, who, again, just remains a mover on the block and someone that you kind of have to double because otherwise she's going to be right underneath the basket, almost regardless of who's defending her. But yeah, like the guard play has just been kind of hit or miss for me all season long. Like the shot making can be there. Like we've seen Tisha Heidemann have games where she's knocking down three or four threes. Courtney Williams is a pull-up artist, particularly inside the arc. It is just aesthetically pleasing watching her get into her bevy of pull-ups. But as far as who's setting the table, like that kind of gets iffy. Like Courtney Williams isn't a playmaker to that degree. She's very much, I'm cooking. Now you're sending an extra defender. I'll make this easy read more so than manipulating in the half court. Natisha Heidemann also isn't that half court manipulator. Like a lot of the playmaking has come down to Alyssa Thomas, it's felt like, and she's done the best that she could. But like, even with that, like the scoring gravity isn't super there. It's hard to, like she's balling with basically, what is it, 0.4 shoulders at this point, and she's still making it do to do. Like it feels like there's a level of playmaking that's missing, and I don't know how much of that can be solved. Like they did just sign Bria Hartley, but even Bria's not necessarily a traditional point in that sense. She's more so attack a tilted defense and bomb away from three if you help off of her. I think looking at them moving forward, like I think that's why it's more important that they find a way to consistently include Jonquel Jones in the offense, which sounds like a ridiculous thing on the surface, considering this is someone who just won MVP last year. Like, yeah, you should probably feature them in your offense. But I think because they don't have a lot of natural playmaking on the roster, like they need to put defenses in rotation consistently to kind of manufacture those reads in a different way. Jonquel is a walking mismatch. Like, you kind of have to build the boat around her and force defense to scramble. That's going to make the reads easier for Natisha Heidemann. That's going to make the reads easier for Courtney Williams. We know Dawana Bonner can get it on her own if necessary. We know Alyssa Thomas can push shot you to death if needed. And again, Jonquel can obviously self-create as well, but you kind of have to build it out because, as you said, they do have these stretches where if the shots aren't falling or the self-created looks aren't falling, from a process standpoint, the Sun just don't look great. And it turns into a lot of late clock shots and some free throw attempts because they're just putting their head down. Like, I feel like that kind of has a ceiling. I would like for it to be a little bit easier for them.
Well, it makes it interesting because we mentioned the offensive talent and it's just maybe getting the pieces to go in the right order. Maybe that's all they're missing. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is an attempt to build something that they can lean on once the postseason hits, as opposed to it has to be Jonquel. Oh no, they're doubling. Now what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
So can they find that sweet spot? Can they find the creation? Because I think all of them are talented, but they're all setting each other up as opposed to being set up and being a blend that way.
I got you. Last game to highlight also came from this past Sunday. The Mystics defeated the Lynx by 13. Again, there are some travel issues on the Lynx side heading into this one that could have at least factored in some. But also, the Mystics with Elena Deladon in the lineup are just a different beast altogether. We held a watch party for this one, and you couldn't stop singing her praises enough, so I'll concede the floor to you.
Well, if only.
If only.
Nah, it's tough. What do you do with EDD when she's playing at this level? I don't know which, like, the blend that you spoke about last week. Pick and hop, pick and roll, space the floor, go get a bucket on their own. It's tough to deal with. And she was in that zone yesterday. And you combine that with the Mystics playing defense at the level they were, and what do you do? That's a tough team to deal with. What are your thoughts about the Mystics?
There's a little bit of fluidity that I think is missing in the half court attack that's somewhat self-imposed. Like, we talked about it during the watch party some, but like, there were quite a few possessions where Natasha Cloud is getting a swing and she's open and she just kind of pumps into a defender recovering and then has to attack from there. And she's like, hey, you told us that you're a shooter. We've seen you knock down shots. We also know, regardless of the jumper, you are one of the most dynamic drivers in basketball. If you have a gap, attack it. Shoot or go. There was just too much of hold, pause, survey, and then make a move. She's still good enough to create out of that, but make it easier on yourself, especially with EDD in the lineup, because there's just going to be a level of attention given to her regard just because of who she is and where she is. And so if you get a gap on top of that, hammer that sucker home. Because if you're able to do that consistently, again, the Mystics are just going to be incredibly tough to deal with. To the EDD point, like, there was a possession in the game, I want to say came in the second half, where it's an EDD post-up after a set play. And she catches the ball middle of the floor. She gets double team. And she pretty much just pumps, then ducks under it and finishes at the rim for an and one. It's just like, well, the defense did what it was supposed to do, and she just said LOL to the double team and scored anyway. Like, it just gets to a point where she's just better at you at this. there isn't much for you to do with that. And I think, I guess, just to bring that conversation to the podcast, because I asked you during the watch party, in terms of the point guard, like, where do you feel like the Rui minutes are going as we get closer to postseason play?
Probably, I'd say one or two stints. Early stint, second quarter stint. Maybe start the fourth. Fill the gaps. Try and create some plays. She's still been fun to watch, but it's very much a I'm running what we're running more than I'm doing that plus creating.
Mm-hmm.
As it felt early in the season. And so it just kind of feels like a few minutes, let's run this, and that's that. Give you some activity, be solid, and then you kind of sit down. And there's more to the table for Rui.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't seen it in a little bit. So I'd anticipate some nights she might get 20, but I think it's just going to be a little 2-3 stints, which is a shame because they need more. It'd be good to have her playing at a higher level so that way you can kind of blend some more lineups. But I think that's where we're at right now, unfortunately.
I got you. Like, I feel like I just wish there was a more concrete answer for her in the half court, aside from we're going to run the set. Because the jumper hasn't been there, like, teams do help off. So I would have loved to see the Mystics find other usages from her. Like, she embraces physicality. Like, we see that on the defensive end. Like, run some inverted action with her and EDD or one of their wings. Let her screen. Use her that way. Like, see if you can unlock her as, like, a short roll threat. Like, maybe that's a cheat code. Maybe that's a hack for her to get some utility. Because defensively, even if it's just an energy drainer type deal, she gets into ball handlers at the point of attack. She's a very good screen navigator. She is pesky, will pick away at the ball. Like, you can use that just to annoy opposing teams. And when she's out in transition, like, very creative passer, can obviously get into the paint and make kicks from there. Like, it's easy to see the pathway offensively when they're able to get stops, and this Mystics defense is very good at full strength, so they get plenty of those. It's just when things slow down, it's like, okay, what is she doing? The pick and rolls are unders. They're helping Goff when she's spaced. And she hasn't shot particularly well, especially in this recent stretch. So get creative. I want to see Rui as a screener.
Man, you used all this time to hate on Rui like this, man.
How
this
is that hate?
This is shameless.
How is that hate? I literally gave her props.
I'm Euro stepping past this conversation.
Wow.
Natasha Cloud or Ariel Atkins, who's more important for the Mystics run?
More important. That's a good question. More important, I think. I want to say Natasha Cloud just because she gives them a little bit more as a driver. I think that element helps. Not that Ariel Atkins can't also drive, but the Cloud drives hit a little bit differently, I think. Where would you go with that?
That's a tough question because you need Atkins scoring. When she scores at a high level, it's very tough to deal with the Mystics. Cloud's playmaking has continued to grow for me, and I feel like that's a piece they're going to need.
Mm-hmm. Like she especially leads the W assist.
As things get tighter. So as far as the importance piece goes, they're both key cogs, but I don't know. You could probably play through a tough shooting night. If Natasha's Cloud is not making plays at this level, where does it come from? And I was impressed. I think she had a play in the Lynx game where she literally backed out. EDD was spaced on the left wing, and she took two dribbles only to get the nail help to come. That's the only purpose. I'm going to take two dribbles as fast as I can. Oh, you're there. Kick three. And I was like, she has moved in the right direction.
The little things. I got you. One quick housekeeping note here on the W. Kelsey Plum agreed to a 2-year extension with the Aces. Forgot to mention that during the Aces Sun conversation. So I think all 5 starters for the Aces are signed through at least next season, which is key for continuity.
To the whole team?
Yeah, pretty. That's a tremendous shot, but also, yeah. Also, beyond the basketball, if you've seen the if you've seen the Asia Wilson TikTok, there just aren't better vibes in the W than the Aces, man. They have so much fun. I'm glad they're sticking together, if for no other reason than for them to have more fun off the court. That's a fun group. But also, they're good. There's something to speak to with continuity and the skill level that they have. So, and Kelsey deserves it.
Yeah, she does. Playing at a very high level. So good for her, especially with the way everything kind of started to get to this level. But that's the fun part, to see a player figure it out and improve and continue to believe in themselves and find a way to get to success. Be respectfully messy for a second.
Okay.
So if the Aces lead the W in vibes, does that mean that the Mercury do not lead the W in vibes?
Not only would I say the Mercury don't lead W in vibes, I would wager they would be 12th in my power rankings in terms of vibes. I might have them 13th in power rankings in terms of vibes.
See, the key is you have to be respectfully messy.
respectfully, I would say they are lower than 11th on my board, in my opinion.
Wings of Mercury. Just vibes. God.
Oh, just vibes. See, here's my thing with the Wings and Mercury. Again, to preface this, very much on the outside. I would say it feels like the Wings don't really rock with each other. The Mercury actively dislike portions of their team. I feel like that's different. And so I would say the Wings probably have better vibes. Like, I think their roster, like, I think they're all, like, individually cool. But, like, together it's probably, like, whatever. The Mercury, like, we've seen the Skylar Diana thing. Sophie's on the team.
Oh, wow. All right. Let me pull the sheet back up. Let's see.
Not the sheet. But I feel like the vibes might be a little bit out.
This man answered this seriously.
But Jesus, I had to break it down. That's what we do in the podcast.
No, we got to work on the respectfully messy playbook, buddy.
Ah, I see. Fair enough. Okay. To close things out, would you like to flow into some free throws for the first time in a bit?
It's back. Finally. The Dunkers have asked for it. And Nikias, for the first time in this calendar year, has free throws.
Wow.
For me.
Wow. What are the... I don't know how I feel about that one. All right. Anyway, I have free throw questions for both leagues. So I will start with the W since we're already here, if that's cool. Who's been the Suns' best player this year?
That's a good question. I'm still going to go Alyssa Thomas.
Okay. Am I crazy for having a Shakira Austin Bam Adebayo comp?
A little.
Why a little?
What's the comp based on, I guess, would be my question.
It would be the defensive slash scheme versatility, be some of the high post playmaking. I was looking at their, looking at some of the stats for their drives and also just foul drawing for both of their rookie years. Very much similar. I posted that tweet in Mark Schindler's mentions if you want to check that out. But yeah, very close there. And I think there's more offensive utility for Shakira moving forward. So that's kind of the framework of a super active big with some skill that can be untapped.
Okay. I could see it. It's not bad. When are you going to start yelling at her to shoot more?
we're gonna start in year three. Like it's rookie year, Shakira. I have no qualms right now. While we're on the Mystics, better front court pairing, EDD and Shakira Austin or Emma Meesom and Candace Parker?
Ooh, that's a good question. Ooh, I gotta go with Meesom and Candace Parker right now.
Okay. All right.
I have to. Very tough to deal with on both ends of the floor. Not that the Mystics duo is not really good, but it's not quite the same level quite yet.
Okay. All right. Better pairing defensively on the wing, since we're still on the Mystics right now. Ariel Atkinson, Natasha Cloud, or insert Sparks combo here?
Insert Sparks combo.
Okay. So like there's just so many. Jordan Canada, Lexi Brown, Brittany Sykes, like however you want to slice. Even Christy Tolliver's back, but she's not the defender she used to be, but still knows where to be. But the Sparks have some juice at the point of attack. I guess it's the real front there. Okay, so if the Christina Williams report is true, Alicia Gray for the Wings was not traded, but is apparently being moved during the offseason. Where would you like to see Alicia Gray play next year?
Liberty.
Ah, I see. Trying to bring some defense to the wing. I respect it. Sophie Cunningham or Kayla McBride?
I need context for this.
Yes.
Kayla McBride.
All right. All right. There are currently three players shooting over 40% from three while taking over five attempts. Can you name them?
Likely no, but I'll give it a shot.
What you got?
You said over 40% with over five attempts?
Yes.
I get a conference? I get a hint?
No.
Dang, big rusty. All right. Kelsey Plum?
That is one, yes.
Sabrina?
No.
Man, really didn't want to give me a hint. man. Lexi Brown?
No.
Allie Quigley?
No.
I'm a tap out.
Wow, this is amazing. Okay, so Kelsey Plum was one. Kelsey Mitchell was another. Maureen Yohannes is the third, leading the WNBA in three-point percentage.
Maureen, I'm so sorry.
I can't believe it. We were all rooting for you.
Hey, big Russ, man. Sorry, y'all.
I'll give you an easier one. Can you name the only player in the W taking at least 5 3-point attempts and also 3 free-throw attempts?
That's got to be Kelsey Plum.
No.
Maureen.
No.
Golly. Kelsey Mitchell?
No.
I don't know.
I thought this was going to be the easy one. Breonna Stewart.
Oh. Nothing's easy.
Taking threes and getting to the line. Yeah, I can't believe it. On the Breonna Stewart note, what would it take for someone to surpass her as the best player in basketball?
It would take a lot.
Who's closest?
Who's closest?
Yeah, who's the second best player in the W?
The second best player in the W?
Yes.
I don't know if there's a two-way force like that off the top of my head. You're supposed to be fun. You're trying to get me packed up, dog.
We're not trying to get you packed. All right, let's move to the to the NBA.
Man, this is why you didn't do free throws.
What do you mean? I'm just asking questions. That's all. All right, Bam Adebayo or Pascal Siakam?
Bam.
All right. Stealing this one from the low post. Donovan Mitchell or Brandon Ingram?
Donovan Mitchell.
Okay. Better offense next season, the Hawks or the Blazers?
The Hawks.
All right. Ivica Zubac or Jusuf Nurkic?
Nurk.
Okay. Who would you rather sign, Eric Bledsoe or Dennis Schroeder?
That's a good one. I'll go Bledsoe.
All right. Avery Bradley or Facu Campazzo?
Avery Bradley.
All right. Carmelo Anthony or Dwight Howard?
Melo.
Huh. Okay. Over under 0.5 stories about Tristan Thompson that don't involve antics or his locker room presence this season.
Under.
That concludes my free throws.
Oh, man. Would you build your franchise around Donovan Mitchell?
No.
The hashtag is Big Agenda, folks. Wow. Kendrick Perkins, 8 hours ago. It's no disrespect to Donovan Mitchell, but is he a number one option type guy? Is he a guy that could take your franchise to the NBA Finals and possibly win a championship? No, ask Mitch Point.
Wow. Was that the lone question?
It was a good one. Came out the gates hot. Do you believe that the phone call between Redacted, Redacted, and Redacted actually happened?
No, like that's a group text at best, and I don't even think that was the content of the, no. No, I'm not buying it. There's been two. No. Actually, no, absolutely not. I don't know.
Who would have more problems with prime DeMarcus Cousins, Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid?
Who would have more problems with them, like defending him or?
Yeah.
Ugh, this feels like a super trap. Who would have more trouble? Probably Jokic.
Okay. How do you feel about Richard Jefferson's refereeing debut?
Didn't he like forget to make a signal for like a made shot during that stretch? Anyway, like it's a cool opportunity for him. I don't have any real problems.
Why did he look the part? Do Josh Giddey and Chet give you Darius Garland and Evan Mobley vibes?
No, they don't.
Okay.
Can't say that they do. What would be the argument for that?
I'm just curious. Would Ja Morant have cooked Michael Jordan?
Cook's probably too strong. No, I don't think he would cook MJ. No disrespect to Ja.
Less hope in discourse. Russell Westbrook or Rudy Gobert?
Less hope in the discourse? Probably Rudy.
Still?
Yeah, still. Like, at least there is consensus that Russ is like a Hall of Famer. People still don't think Rudy's good. Like, we're still doing Rudy got played off the... No. I don't think that's getting better. Especially with what he got traded for.
Oh my God.
No, I don't think. I think we're a long ways from that. Between that conversation and then like the Wolves account tweeting out that Gobert and Cat have like the two highest offensive ratings. I think we're a long ways from like overall the conversation around Rudy Gobert making sense.
Okay.
I would like for us to get there, but.
Okay. This man really went with the Rudy cape.
Is that a cape?
Yeah, man.
The question was less faith. But how's that? What do you mean?
Have you seen the Russell Westbrook discourse?
Yes.
KZ Akpala or Kenrich Williams?
Kenrich.
Okay. Why'd you say it so quickly?
I think Kenrich is better at basketball. I like both of them, obviously, but. Kimmich can do things on offense.
So the truth came out. I like it.
Well,
more likely to make a run to the conference finals, the son of the Mystics.
See, now I'm trying to think of like what the second round Mystics matchup would be, because I feel like this is a trap.
I don't know. I want to say it'd be this guy, I think.
More likely, I don't. The Suns kind of feel a move. I'd probably go Mystics. Off the top of my head, I'd probably go Mystics.
Okay, very good. Summer League. How many times did you big time someone in the Thomas and Mack Center?
I don't think I big timed anyone in the Thomas and Mack Center.
Can I find someone who you did not respond to their text in a timely fashion?
probably one.
You see the growth, folks.
What do you mean?
I don't know, man.
Okay.
Felt good to be back, right?
In summer league or?
Some free throws, man.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I wasn't expecting.
Oh, did you apologize to Knicks fans?
No, I haven't.
Since apparently all you need to do to get an apology from Nikias is just clip up a clip and quote tweet him. I've been trying to get an apology for 2 years.
What do you think? What would you like me to apologize for?
You said the Knicks defensive rating was something that it wasn't, right?
No, I mean, what did you want me to apologize for?
Oh, we don't have enough time left in the show.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, then. But yes, my bad. Like, I was trying to, I guess, make a general point that the defense has to be at a level for the offense to make sense for the Knicks, something along those lines. And I said, what, 9th best offense, 20th best defense? The Knicks were not the 20th best defense last year. Like, they got up to 11. They weren't great to start the year. I think they were, I want to say 17th or 18th pre-All-Star break. And they were the best defense in basketball after the All-Star break. And so they finished pretty well. So, yeah, I just messed that up. Could have been tighter with what I was saying. So my apologies. I do not have a vendetta against the Knicks, I promise. I just messed up. So there you go.
You can only watch one for the rest of the week.
Okay.
Sophie Cunningham or tweets from Ball Don't Stop.
Wow. What's the Mercury schedule?
Actually, no. I'm going to reframe that question because it's not fair. You have to publicly agree with one of them.
Oh, in that case, Ball Don't Stop. That's an easy, yeah. Like, there will be a basketball thing that we agree with.
All right. Well, that's good stuff, man.
All right. Glad to. That's me. I actually have one question that you have not answered yet.
What you got, Doug?
Would Rasheed Wallace be a 2-time MVP in today's era of basketball?
I mean, I'm not doing Rasheed Wallace with you. Like, look, man, there's one thing I'm not doing. I'm completely irrational about Rasheed Wallace, so I'm not doing this with you. You know what? You sign off on the pod by yourself, buddy. Take that.
Wow. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. Subscribe to us if you have not already. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
Yes. And when you say hi, hello, do you say bye, goodbye?